My name is Patty, and I'm an alcoholic. I tell you, I have just been overwhelmed by this conference. It's my first time at a woman's conference, and I am just so happy to be here. Let's get the bookkeeping out of the way first. I'm a member of the Linwood Lansing 12 and 12 group. We meet in Linwood, Illinois, on Friday nights at 8 o'clock. If you're ever in that neck of the woods, please come join us. We just have a hell of a good time at our group. We laugh a lot. We cry, but we laugh a lot. And we try to learn about sobriety one day at a time. And we love to celebrate sobriety. So if you have a dry day, come on down, honey, and we'll just help you hoot. And by the grace of God, it's February 8, 1977, since he took away that compulsion to drink the drug alcohol. And for that, I'm so grateful. And like to call me the flaming bitch in the hell. There are a number of people in Chicago I don't sponsor that call me the flaming bitch from hell. Just think, the only thing I had to do to get all this love tonight was to fuck up. And go to prison and shoot a few cops. That's for you, Karen. When I was early in sobriety, they kept reading the promises to me at every meeting. I was called the miracle baby, and I want to share that with you tonight. And they kept calling me the miracle baby, and they kept reading the promises. Almost every meeting I went to, and I found out later that they didn't normally do that, but they kept reading those promises to me. And I one day at a time, I started believing that if they had could come true in your life, that maybe, just maybe, if I shut up, show up, that maybe one day at a time that those same promises could come true in my life. And my God, isn't this a blast? This is the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. Looks a little different than some of the copies. I was rummaging around in Arlington Heights one day in a used bookstore, and I came across two of them for $65 total cost. Yeah, it's amazing what you can do when you're sober. And I had the $65 without writing a hot check. I had a sponsor early on in sobriety who insisted that I read the book, study the book, live the book, then go give it away, in that order. And I had been reading and studying the book. And I had been going around a big old circuit speaker, you know, and trying to tell everybody how wonderful I was and what a wonderful miracle. And one day I'm reading the book, and I read it. I read something I had been missing. And I like to read it before I get started, because it kind of has reminded me in the last 10 years of what I'm supposed to tell you. See, I was confused for a long time about what I was supposed to tell you. And it says in the page number is different because it's page 39 in the first edition. But in the second and third, I don't know what page it is. But it's in the chapter, There Is a Solution. And it says, each individual in their personal stories describes in his own language. And please pay attention to that. You know, please don't come in here and try to clean up our act all at one time. You know, hell, I'm on the road to progressing. You know, I'm progressing. I'm only 19 years sober, for Christ's sake. What do you expect, you know? I'm getting better. So, you know, this is my terminal disclaimer. You know, if you don't cuss, fine, but I'm getting better. See, from his own language and from his own point of view, the way he established his relationship with God. And if I tell you any story different than how I developed a relationship with God, then what we read tonight, A, B, and C, is a lie. It's a lie. And I don't think it's a lie, see. Now, I came in here arrogant, nasty, venomous, horrible person who didn't believe in anything and anybody, didn't trust anything or anybody, and I was going to get you before you got me. And that's what you had to work with. Wonderful raw material, isn't it? Thursday morning, I'm trying to blow dry my hair, and I'm getting late, and every once in a while in Chicago, I don't want to turn you guys off because I want you to come there next year, but every once in a while, we have little traffic problems. Not too often. Not too often. Don't worry, you're going to be at the Marriott. Dolores Colford. Oh, I broke her anonymity. Dolores C. Got you a nice little place downtown. It's gorgeous, gorgeous place. And so you're not going to have to worry about damn cars and traffic. Anyway, and besides, you'll get on our L, you'll go around, you'll love it. Anyway, but there was a little traffic problem Thursday morning. And I knew, I'd been listening to the radio. See, I'm sober now. I know that if I got to get to the airport, you better turn on the radio, see if there's traffic. All of the arteries are jammed. All of them. They're not moving slowly. They're not moving. And I'm trying to get my hair, and I'm allowing 2.5 hours to get 45-minute drive. I think I'm giving myself plenty of time. I'm sober now. I'm trying to react rationally and everything. And the phone rings, and it's my sponsor from Texarkana, Arkansas. Patty, how you doing, honey? It's your birthday. I said, yes, ma'am. She said, are you still sober? I said, yes, ma'am, I am. Good. Well, she has a lot of confidence in my ability to do this one day at a time. And she says, I hear you're going to go up there and speak to them women in Salt Lake City. I said, yes, ma'am, I am. She said, all right. Now, I don't want to tell you what she told me to tell you because after spending... No, I can't. Because it's... As we progress, you'll understand what she said. I promise you, you'll know before the end of this talk's over. How's that? But I don't want to turn you off. See, sometimes I have a problem of turning people off and then they miss the message. You understand what I'm saying? Do you do that too? I piss people off right from get-go sometimes and then they shut down, they don't hear anything. So I don't want to piss you off right from get-go, see? Hey, listen, I'm just up here doing the best I can before I forget. I want to thank the committee. I've been invited a lot of places to talk all over Canada, United States, and Mexico, and that's not bragging, that's just a simple fact the way it is. And it's not because I'm a wonderful person. AAs love to hear bizarre stories, and I just happen to have a real bizarre story. But I want you to know that your dollars have treated me very nicely. They have been like a fairy princess. They've got me this beautiful place, and I've got a gift basket. Can't even carry the damn thing. It's just loaded down with everything wonderful. They flew me in. It's just nice. They've been treating me. You people from the state of Utah should take a lot of pride in the committee that you elected to represent you. They have done a wonderful job. They're a good old bunch of girls, I tell you, you know? They're hoot. They really are. They're gas. They're a lot of fun. And they got a good sense of humor, and I like that. And they've taught me some things. And that's nice to know that I learned some things. I learned some nice things this week. Okay, let's get on with my sad-ass story, and then you'll understand. Okay, I did my bookkeeping. I'm just so grateful tonight. If I start crying, just go out and have a cigarette, you know. Go have a cigarette and come back, and then we'll finish it up. I told the taper to put on a long-ass tape tonight because I feel hot. I feel hot. All right. I wasn't born into a regulation family. Now, I don't like to get into this too much because now with all this ACOA and CODA and all this other shit going, you know, I mean, you know, wonderful programs going, you know, we've given a whole new meaning to fault and blame, you know, God, you know. And I love to sponsor. I don't let them go till they're at least 5 years sober. By that time, they don't want to go anymore. And did she say that? They're shutting down on me now. Anyway, my mother and father didn't even know one another. You know, it was just two ships, little money passing. And my mother was illiterate, a street whore, and Ojibwa Indian. And I was confused right out of the womb. Because I didn't come out of her womb, see. Now, you're thinking, oh, God, she better explain this, what she just said. See, I'm 5'5½", and I'm white. I want you girls to know I'm white, see, white. Now, remember this, because it's important. And this man that called my father 8 years later, he was darker than my mother. My mother was a very, very bronzed 6-foot Indian with the black hair parted in the middle. Indian, you know, woo, that guy. Now, I'm 5'5½". I'm Irish. I don't know where the hell I came from, but I didn't come from them two, I'll tell you right now. Now, it was a Catholic hospital. All respect to Maurice out there. She understands. She did a little nipping on herself, you know. And I was born in this Catholic hospital in Washington, D.C., July 30th, 1939. And you know, these daughters of St. Vincent de Paul, the charity, the big boat girls, you know. Now, they nipped a little bit. I know they nipped a little bit. And on July 31st, 1939, they switched me with some gal that's 56 years old walking around. She's real tall, 6 foot. She's got black and gray hair, bronze skin, and she's got these short Irish parents. Now, I know that for a fact. Now, I want to share something with you. I don't know about all this reincarnation business. And one gal was talking to me one day and was trying to convince me about karma and reincarnation. And the only thing going through my mind was, oh, God, I must have really pissed God off to have come back into this life. I've always been trying to figure out what the hell I did. It must have been bad, you know, to have to come back in this shit. You know? But anyway, it's better now. Mother drank a lot, and when mother drank a lot, she disappeared a lot, often. And there was, I have an older sister, Tina, and Tina is 6'1", and Tina's got black hair parted in the middle and is bronze. And I've got two brothers, and they are tall, and they got black hair parted in the middle, hanging down, and they're bronze, see? And I got uncles, and they're tall, and they got black hair parted in the middle, and they're bronze, see? So I want to tell you about this confusion of growing up. Let's talk about Mama first, and then we'll get to Papa, you know, the asshole of the family. But we're going to talk about Mama first. They didn't like me too much, my mother's family, because I was not one of them. And I played that to an advantage. You know, I had a foot in both worlds. In the white world, in the Indian world. And I knew from get-go I could play that. I could play that like a fine accordion. You know, we alcoholics know how to do things like that. We're masters, we're actors and actresses. God, we're good. We're good. I mean, we're real good at doing it, you know? And so there was the Academy Theater in Washington, D.C. that didn't let Indians in. I mean, you know, we Indians have had it bad long before black people ever had it bad. I mean, at least let the black people in. But they didn't let us Indians in. You know, we were real scuzzballs. So I would go up there. I look white, right? I'd buy the ticket for a nickel. This is a long time ago. I'm an old broad. See, I'd buy a ticket for a nickel, go around the back door, let all my Indian relatives in. Now, the movie, I got to tell you about the movie. Every Saturday, the movie was the same. Well, it was. The title was different, but the movie was the same. It was. The title was different. But every movie, it was the John Wayne, Hopalong Cassidy, Roy Rogers, white man, hear me out now, and the heroine was always a blonde. God. And in those days, all they did was they were going to scalp the blonde. Now today, today they would have sodomized her, you know, and gangbang and all this other shit. But in those days, all they did was going to scalp the bitch, you know. But back in those days, well, you get times have changed, honey, you know. And it was always the drunken Indian, see, and they were going to scalp that girl, that blonde, white skin, blonde. And here comes the cavalry. They're going to shoot that early in there. Boom, boom, boom. And Roy Rice saved the day. Now, that's the scene. Every Saturday, it was the same thing. We'd pile out of the movie. Here's the white kids, right? Here's on this side. Here's the white kids. Over here is the dirty, rotten Indians that had just scalped that blonde. And the white kids would say something to the Indians. The Indians would say something to the white kids. And all of a sudden, every Saturday, one Saturday at a time, we got the shit kicked out of us. Until one Saturday, it occurred to me that I did not look like them dirty, rotten Indians. I looked like them white kids. So I took a big, giant leap over to the white kids' side, and I said, beat shit out of them. Beat them up. See? Now, that played hell in my sobriety because I learned how to go to the bar, and if I was a brain surgeon, you know, or a lawyer, or a doctor, if you were a Republican, hell, I have another beer, honey. I'm a Republican. If you were a bleeding heart liberal, we won't talk about personal opinions about that. And I got to tell you, Katie, my old sponsor, Katie said that anybody that sobered up in Alcoholics Anonymous automatically became a Republican because we are self-supporting through our own contribution. I shouldn't have put that in. Just, I'll get the guy to erase it off the tape. So I want you to know that here was the little girl that really grew up in a confused world. And I don't see, I don't blame my mother. I went through a lot of hell in sobriety trying to figure out Mama. And now today I know that my mother did the best she could do with what she had. And I'm real cool with that. And I'm real comfortable with that. And guys, she's dead now. She died alcoholic insanity. And I'm okay with that. And there were four of us from Mama. We all had different fathers. And three of the four of us are alcoholics and in the program Alcoholics Anonymous. And we were the three that were taken away from Mama and put in good homes. Now, the one that was left to grow up with Mama is not an alcoholic. She's sick as shit, I'm telling you. Really. Real neurotic. You know. And she looks down her noses at us. But that's okay. You know, we love her. We love her. Yeah, okay. Now we'll move on to Papa. My mother... She wasn't a very nice person to me. She hated me because I was white-looking. And she did a lot of nasty things to me, and she allowed men to do a lot of nasty things to me starting at 4 years old. And they hurt me. They hurt me. They physically hurt me. And you know what they did to me. And they paid big money to do this to me. And yeah, well, that's things happen like that. Spit happens, you know? Things happen like that, but I survived it, you know. God had some other plans for me. And there's a lot of gals I've met that needed to hear what I went through so that they could somehow heal from what they went through. So it's okay. It is okay. It was real painful for a long time to have to try to tell you, because usually mamas don't do that to their daughters, you know that. Daddies do it to daughters, but usually mamas don't do it to daughters, and she did. And I was real ashamed for a long time. And the person that I was able to tell that to was a man by the name of Bill Randall, who died a drunk, frozen, in a Chicago alley. So, these groups are nice. This is nice, isn't it? But please, don't ever leave regular AA. Because there's newcomers out there. They need to hear you, and they need to be able to find you. And they're not going to find you in women's groups. They're going to find you in regular AA. So go to your women's groups if you have to. But That's what Katie told me to tell you. Yeah. Okay. So one time Mama was sitting there, I guess I was about 8 years old, and my mother was commencing to thinking. That was damn dangerous to my mother when she got to thinking. Because when she got to thinking, we got in trouble, you know. Every once in a while, Mother would try to straighten her act up. And the first thing, she'd do two things. She'd clean that little one-room hovel that we had that didn't have indoor plumbing. We had a slop bucket. And sometimes we didn't have that. And we didn't have an icebox or electric refrigerator. And we didn't have beds. And we didn't have mattresses. And it was just a flop place. And Mother would do things. She'd want to clean that little hovel up. And the second thing, she'd send us to the Grace Baptist Church. And my sister and Tina and I, this before Johnny and Vernon came along, we would pray that Mother would get drunk so we wouldn't have to go to that damn Grace Baptist Church anymore. You know? Only good thing about that place is they sang. They wailed. I have to tell you, they did wail. And I love music. And I loved the singing in the church. I always liked that. I got a hoot out of that, you know. And I always got donuts, especially if I would admit to being a sinner. Oh, yeah. See, now, that's another trick I learned about, you know, how to be a good alcoholic. See, I could admit to you to be anything, and I could get out of you what I needed, see, by admitting to what you wanted me to admit to. Tell me what you want me to be. I'll be it. You want me to be a lady tonight? Oh, God. A little shrinking violet. Oh, honey. You know, born in the South, you know, Washington, D.C. is 150 miles south of the Mason-Dixon line. We are Southerners. You think we're Easterners? We're Southerners there, you know. I don't care what the shit you hear. We are Southerners. And in where I come from, a woman can be a lot of things. She can be, she can take spells, you know, go dry out every once in a while, you know, take spells. And she can be, spend a little too much of her husband's money, but she cannot be an alcoholic. God, because you can't marry well. And in the days when I was a kid growing up, that's the only thing you could do was marry well. And I knew that by the time I was six, I was never going to marry. I had blown it. I knew that. Anyway, Mother's sitting there one day trying to go back 8 years, 9 months, and 15 minutes. And she was trying to remember who she was with. She kept looking at me, and she'd sip on her beer. And she'd be looking at me, trying to remember who I looked like. And didn't think anything about it. And one day, it's like a scene out of one of these awful movies. These men came in, snatched me out of this house. I never saw my mother and sister again until I was 20 years old. She had gone to blackmail some man who was born in Sicily. Now, do I have to explain any more about this? He was the head of the big family of Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. She was trying to blackmail him. And he had never had any kids. Hmm? Well, we talk a lot about step two in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and some people don't get the hang of it for a while. Never said she was sane. And he snatched me away, not because he loved me or wanted to see his child. He just didn't want the bitch, you know, blackmailing. And so he sent her out to Omaha, Nebraska, gave her money to live, and told her if she was dead, me, if she ever came back to Washington, D.C., and she believed it. And he took me home, and I was examined by a doctor and put in a sanitarium. I was dying of tuberculosis, malnutrition. I had rickets so bad I couldn't stand on my two legs because my legs were bowed. And I remember that night they shaved my hair because I had body lice all over me, even in my eyes, and they shaved my hair. Now, I have to tell you about Indians. Indians have this thing with hair. Every Indian in this room will tell you that if you cut somebody's hair against their will, you're cutting their spirit and you're killing them. And these people shaved my hair. They shaved it. I was bald. And I thought they were trying to kill me. And I can't describe my father's house to you because that's the first thing that impressed me. It was not my father. It was not this beautiful woman who became my stepmother who was, thank God for stepmothers. I don't know if you had one. I don't know. I don't care how you feel about yours. But mine, thank God, was an angel from God who saved my life. And also, I'm going to tell, now we'll talk about blondes. We'll get this part of the talk all over with. And I'll tell you about my little thing with blondes. Now, for a long time in my life, especially in sobriety, I had a hell of a thing with blondes, you know. As soon as I met you and you were blonde, I shut down. Now, I got to tell you about my adopted sister. My father had adopted a girl named Patsy. As a matter of fact, her name was Patricia Ann. Well, we better stop right here and go back up. I forgot to tell you something, because it's real important. It's this identity business with mine. My name today is legally Patty, P-A-T-T-I. It's not Patricia, it's not Pat, it's not Patsy, and it's not Patty with a Y. And if you screw it up, I'm going to come down on you real hard. Now, let me tell you why, and then you'll understand. I was born, literally translated into English from Indian, from Ojibwa, noble daughter of Grey Dove. And during World War II, the federal government, without our knowledge, changed our names, all Indian names, and I was named Patricia Ann Gray. Okay? That's two. Then I went to live with this Sicilian, and he didn't like Patricia Ann Gray, so he called me Patrice Anita Cecilia Tarantino. Okay, now you got that? I'm not even 9 years old yet, kids. I got three names, see? Then it's World War II, and people don't kind of, you know, remember back, and some of you can remember back, they didn't like Germans and Italians, you know, they were kind of the bad guys. So my father decided he didn't want to be a WOP anymore, he wanted to be American. You know, real American. So he changed our name to Patricia Ann Tarrant. Are you keeping score now? And then, see, people were saying, Joseph, why do you have two daughters, Patricia Ann Tarrant and Patricia Ann Tarrant? Remember the girl he had adopted was named Patricia Ann. See? We're coming up on five now, kids. He changed her name to Patsy and my name to Patty. I'm 10 years old. I'm going to school now. I've had five names. See, so don't call me Patricia. Don't call me. My name is Patty. I'm real comfortable with that. I don't know what the hell the last name's going to be on any given day. Depends on how he acts. You know, if he acts right, I'll keep LoCascio. He's been acting straight for 9 years, so the dude's all right. So I'm Patty LoCascio. But, you know, he's still on a probation basis, you know, 9 years. Patsy was blonde and honey-skinned and blue-eyed, and she had a personality that if you didn't like Patsy, something was wrong with you. Patsy had the kind of personality everybody loved. She was a nice person. She was dumb. Hey, you can't have everything, you know? We got to settle for our gifts in life. I, on the other hand, was skinny, pimply, ugly, ugly personality. But I was smart. I was smart. But he never noticed it. And I got to tell you about the nuns. I started Catholic school. I started school when I was 10 years old. I finished high school when I was 15 and a half. I went to 12 years of school in 5 and a half years. Now, Sister Genevieve had a nervous breakdown after the first year, my first year in Catholic school, which I don't think she ever taught again. And Carl Jordan today has a big thing on his forehead because one day she threw this big book, which she did on several occasions, and I would duck and it would always hit Carl Jordan, and then I was a survivor. I'm a street person, you know. Somebody throws a bucket book at you, damn it, you duck, you know. But anyway, God bless my stepmother and God bless the nuns. That's why I think I'm alive today, because a couple of women took enough interest in this scared, frightened, ugly little girl, because they saw something there. The same way you girls did when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. Some of you didn't give up on me. When I would stand there and cuss out and moon you, I'd drop my drawers and moon you. And, hey, well, you know, we all have to do what we have to do for sobriety. Nobody ever did that at your meetings, huh? Maybe you haven't gone to enough meetings. Anyway, I've taken up too much time. I just want you to know about the little girl that picked up the first drink. I graduated. I was valedictorian. I was 15 and a half years old. I was as ugly as sin. And I believe today that if you think you're ugly, you're ugly. I don't care what you look like. If you believe that you're a nothing and a nobody, you're a nothing and a nobody. And nothing on God's green earth is going to change that until you change your conception of yourself. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me. You haven't taught me how not to drink. You've taught me how to change my thinking one day at a time. And for that, I love you. So let me tell you about my first drink. God almighty, you know, non-drinkers. Have you ever asked a non-alcoholic, not a non-drinker, a non-alcoholic their first drink of alcohol? I don't know. Somewhere in college, I guess, high school, senior graduate. Honey, we alcoholics know the exact moment. It's like losing your virginity. You know when it happened, baby. I tell you. Woo! I got to tell you about my first drink of alcohol. My father finally got me a date. Yeah, I did. I was like 16. I was working at the State Department, had 4 top secret clearances. How a mafia guy ever got me 4 top secret clearances, I don't know. But yeah, I got a job in the State Department. Big, high job. I was making a lot of money. And he thought it was time that I date. I think I was 16, going on 17 years old. And I knew I didn't want to be like my mother. I knew I didn't want to be like my mother. My beautiful stepmother had one character defect. One. She smoked 4 cartons of cigarettes a week. She had beautiful raw silk dresses from Julius Garfinkel, dressed beautifully. And I saw her get up every morning and cough and cough and cough. Now, I am 56 going on 57. I have never had a cigarette in my life. Now, but the thing of it is, why couldn't I do that with alcohol? I had seen my real mother die one day at a time from drinking alcohol. Why couldn't I learn the same lesson? I don't know, see. So I don't understand people who smoke. My husband smokes, and I asked him, when are you going to stop, because he's getting emphysema. He says, pretty soon. Hey. You know, I don't identify with that. So now I understand a little bit about how non-alcoholics feel about us. Now I understand, see, and I'm cool with that. Anyway, well, let's get back to my first date. 16 and a half years old, father finds somebody that's socially acceptable to him. Now, that's a joke. That is a joke. Whoever is socially acceptable to a murderer, you know, a mafia person, a crud, you know. Anyway, he was big and fat, and he had 4 bellies. Hey, listen, when you're ugly, you can't be too choosy, you know? And I weighed about maybe 80 pounds, 5'5½", and I had a terminal case of zits, you know, the big purple ones with the pus running out of it. And my eyebrows grew together like John L. Lewis, and my father was from Sicily, and only loose women shaved under their armpits, and you could plait the damn stuff. It was so long. And I didn't have to wear black hose because I had so much black hair on my legs, you know, from, you get the message. I was cute. And I had bad breath. So we're going down the beach from Washington, D.C. Now, in those days, there were 2 beaches. One very close to, there was a lot of beaches, 2 very close together. One was Chesapeake Beach, and it was kind of nice and nice little restaurants. And the place to the left was North Beach, Maryland. Now, that's where loose women, huzzies, angle shooters, lowlifes, and rednecks. Now, maybe you Utah people, do you know what a redneck is? Yeah. And we went down there, and the only thing I was thinking was, my father's going to kill this son of a bitch when we get back home, and he knows I've been in North Beach, Maryland. But there was a part of me, my heart was going pop, 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 because I could hardly wait to get to see where the loose women looked like and the rednecks, and I knew there was country and western. My father made us listen to opera a lot. Jesus, a lot of Puccini and Verdi, you know, and I wanted to listen to Connie B. Gay's station in Washington, D.C., and I like that, lay your head upon my pillow, help me make it through the night, hold your warm and tender body close to mine. You know, I mean, now that had some feeling to it, you know. I could identify with that. And I just wanted to go down there, and they had gambling. And I was already addicted. I hadn't even done it yet, and I was addicted to it, see. So we get into this place called Ewald's Tavern. See how you can remember your first drink of alcohol? And it was a Miller High Life beer. It was cold, wet, and delicious. Poured it down my throat, went down to my belly, and I love the way Clancy tells it. It went boom. Oh, honey, I drank another one, and it went boom. Now, I've asked non-alcoholics, when they drink, does it ever go boom when it gets down to your belly? And they don't know what I'm talking about, see? They have no idea. They go glug, 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 glug. It doesn't go boom, see? And by the 5th beer, I had my first spiritual experience. God! I got to tell you about it because it's real important. One of my most favorite movies of all time was what was Dorothy and Toto and Wizard of Oz. And I love this part because her name was the Good Witch. What was her real name in the Anyway, she was the last wife of Flo Ziegfeld. You know why? Billy Burke. Do you know why she was the last wife of Flo Ziegfeld? She outlasted the son of a bitch. See? It's the only, I like that. Anyway, I'm sitting here in this bar in Ewald's Tavern this hot summer Sunday afternoon, and here comes Billy Burke in a bubble. And she's coming at me. And she's smiling. And she says, "Boo." "I'm going to give you the ability to read minds." And I looked at old dog, and he was grinning like a cat, getting ready to pounce on the canary. And I read his mind. You know what he was thinking? "It's only going to take one more beer." See, I was a virgin. "It's only going to take one more beer. And them five Miller High Lifes." See, I drank like the big book says. I drank for the effect. I had them five beers in me. I was queen of the universe. The zits had dropped off. The flat chest had blossomed right in front of me. The stuttering, I was telling jokes to the boys, and they were laughing. I was dancing with men. I'd never danced with a man. I was so scared of men. Men had hurt me. I was having a good time. I loved it. I thought, God, I had arrived. Bill's story. If you can't identify with Bill's story, something's wrong with you. He said, fame and fortune come his way. He had arrived. And any alcoholic I know, I had arrived. You get that juice in you, honey? Bring them on. Bring Newt Gingrich on. Pasty face little bastard. Bring him on. Bring on Rush Limbaugh. Pow, pow, pow. See? And I was grinning back at old dog, and I was thinking, you son of a gun. If you live to be 1,000, you ain't going to get in my drawers. And he didn't. And never saw dog again. But you see, the love affair started. The 22-year love affair started. Alcohol. God bless alcohol. God bless alcohol. Because of alcohol, I didn't blow my brains out. Because of alcohol, the pain was put out long enough till I got to you. And you knew what to do with me. If I hadn't had the pain reliever, I don't know where I'd be today. God bless alcohol. Saved my life. See? And for 22 years, alcohol worked. For 22 years, it did its number on me. When I drank that drug, it did it every time, one day at a time. Now I got to tell you about my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. By the time I was 20 years old, I was not skinny anymore. I had had a baby. All the things that should have blossomed. I had made a lot of money, and I'm not going to explain to you how I made that money. But I was real good at what I did. And I left them with a big smile on their face. Had parted them from a lot of their dough. And left, they were pleased with the transaction, so was I, you know. It was business. Business, pure and simple business, you know. And I'm real cool with that today, too, you know. And the IRS loves me today because I went back and paid taxes. This sponsor, you would not believe this crazy sponsor I have. Jesus. God, that's stolen insanity. If we have time, I'll tell you about that. 20 years old, I'm in the city of Chicago. Man, y'all are going to get to see it next year. You love it. You will love the people of Chicago. They're the most diverse people. There's every ethnic background. There's every kind of restaurant. Man, you ain't seen nothing yet. You wait till you get there. It's great. And I was up in Chicago, it was in the late 50s, and I was buying lakefront up around the Edgewater Beach Hotel. It was an old Jewish rental neighborhood. It was beautiful. And I was up there. I had over $1 million. And this guy, he's still sober today, John Murphy, was an old railroad man who was a real estate guy. And he asked me if I wanted to go to a meeting Sunday night at the Bismarck Hotel. And I thought it was a real estate meeting. And I went to my first A&A meeting. See? And they took me in there. I swear to God, I hope your first meeting wasn't like this. And no women in the room. Looked like they had been, January 1959, looked like those bastards had been dead 3 days and somebody forgot to bury them. Nasty looking, prune faced pukes, I'm talking about. Oh, gray. Man, cobwebs, you know. And at this whole meeting, they were trying to convince me that my life was unmanageable. Now, here I am, 20 years old. I was hot looking. I had dyed my hair red. I had the biggest set of tits you'd ever want to see. 19-inch waistline, had over $1 million and an IQ up around 200. And these bastards are trying to convince me my life is unmanageable. I was thinking, you know, I'm glad they got this thing for these boys. They really need all the help they can get. And at the end of the meeting, they knew they hadn't gotten through to me. And one of them looked at me and said, "Hey, girl, you want what we have?" And I said, "Hell no, I hope it's not catching." But why I stayed in Alcoholics Anonymous, I will never know. To this day, I don't know. See? Now, I celebrated a milestone last year, and I went to my, it was February 1995. Not February, it was March the 8th. March, around March. And I went to my meeting on Friday night, my home group, and they said, "What are you so happy about?" I said, "I want you to know that I am now sober in AA longer than I was drunk in AA." It took me 18 years and 1 month to get sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. So when you tell people just go to meetings, you better add some andas behind there, you know. It helps if you don't drink. You know, it helps. It helps if you work the steps. It helps if you get a sponsor. It helps if you get a home group. So when you're telling people, just go to meetings, just add a little bit more andas to it, you know. Well, I went to you because y'all were a swell bunch of people. I liked you. You were the first bunch of people I'd ever been around that didn't want anything out of me. I kept waiting for you to figure out what the hell you wanted from me. And you know, in all those years, I never got hit on. I don't understand that. I never got hit on. There was not one person that ever betrayed the trust. Oh, I was going to say, I don't want to tell you this. I don't want to tell you this because I don't think it's fair. In sobriety, people have betrayed a trust to a point, but I don't see it as evil today or bad. I see it as another opportunity to grow up, and I hope you understand that. Do you understand that? Yeah, because they did. If they wanted to be ugly, that's okay. You know, it's how I perceive it to be, and it hurt for a long time. Some of the shit they tried to pull on me. I'm getting in my heart. So, never mind. It's just not important. But it was a good learning experience. But we better move on. Used to drink at meetings. Yeah. Went to a meeting toward the end, was drinking at meetings. And people would say, "Oh my God, newcomers especially. You know, newcomers there. Don't you love newcomers?" I love them. I love newcomers. God, they're so fierce. Newcomers are fierce. I love them. Especially around 2 years old. You know, two years sobriety. God, they're fierce. I mean, you want anything done, get somebody under 5 years to do it. You get them over 5 years, they're worse shit. Yeah. That's when they want to delegate authority. Look at here. This one delegated. See? She did the work. She had to call. I like it. I like that. But them new babies, they're just fierce. Started going to prison. Started going to prison a lot. Started going to jail a lot. Drinking. We better talk about being a woman for me. I want to share with how I felt about it. I hated being a woman. And I've talked to enough women in my sober life that you felt the same way too. I didn't like being a second-class citizen. I had grown up in that Sicilian's home. And you ever hear of any female mafia, big female mafia? Never, have you? Have you ever heard any? Nah. And I hated it because they had the word that I wanted. They had power, P-O-W-E-R. They had the power over life and death. My father could buy anything or anybody, and he did. And power. society all of my life because I hated being a woman. There was one point in my teenage years where I was thinking about going over to wherever it was, Denmark or, you know, and what, George Jorgensen went over there and he came back Christine Jorgensen. I was going to go over as Patricia and come back as Patrick, you know. I didn't know if they could do it, but... And it's not because I was hot for women, it's because I hated being a woman, because I hated being a second-class citizen. And I had a big... And I drank a lot. I drank a hell of a lot about that. So I found out that when you got a 38... Karen, do you hear me, honey? You had one of them... What was them big boom-booms you told me about. But I had a big boom-boom, too. And that got me a lot of respect. You get an alcoholic with alcohol in him and a gun, honey, you got instant respect. And the people I came in contact with most were the cops. Poor people like Karen out there just trying to do her job, you know? And Karen come at me and she'd say, let's talk. I'd blow her kneecap off, you know? Well, they start sending you to prison for things like that, one day at a time. And Daddy would get me out of prison. See, they'd put me in, Daddy'd get me out. I went to 5 prisons, 5 times, you know? And Texas, God, you never want to go to a Texas prison. Right, Texas girl? Never. Badass place. Went to Florida prison. Never want to. It's hot. Even in the wintertime, it's hot. Virginia, went to prison. And the last time, I wasn't cute and pretty anymore. And I didn't have any money left anymore. And alcohol had done to me what it does to every alcoholic. It had literally robbed me of everything. Everything that I wanted to be or thought about being or ever had dreams of. It robbed everything. See? And last time I was sentenced to prison was 1972, 4 counts of murder, 1, and I was guilty. 4 cops had raped and mutilated me, and I found them. And people said, were you drinking? No. Stone cold sober that day. Any man ever raped and mutilate me again, I'd do it all over. Now, I'm cool with that. And if you're not, I'm cool with it. Okay. February the 8th, 1977, I'm laying up underneath a bridge in Eloise, Florida, in a freezer box, drinking rubbing alcohol. That's where alcohol took me. Alcoholism took me. And still, I could not stop drinking. You see, it was never the first part of the first step, was it? That's not what kills us. It's that second part of the first step, when we have to admit that our lives have become unmanageable, that we are, in fact, powerless. And alcoholics are not going to say anything like that. And I wasn't either. How could I be an How could I really be an alcoholic? I am doing just fine, thank you very much. And I'd come to your silly-ass little meetings because I liked you. I did not like your message. I liked you. On February the 8th, 1977, the moment of truth came. That's the only thing I know how to tell you, the moment of truth. And on that day, I was whipped, and I was tired. People have asked me, what happened that day, Patty, especially people who are not alcoholics. They say, what happened? I don't know. I just was tired. I just didn't want to lie the lie. I didn't want to shoot the angles anymore. I didn't want to have to get up. You know, when you're on Skid Row, you have no money, no source of income, and you have to get drunk and pass out at least 3 or 4 times in a 24-hour period, and you have to be resourceful enough to get the money or steal it or lie or cheat or thieve or whore to get the money to buy the booze, to get drunk, to pass out, to come to in a 24-hour period. And that's a lot of work. And I was tired of shooting the shit, shooting the angles, lying and thieving and conniving and whoring, and I was tired. And on that day, I didn't care to live, and I was scared of dying, and I didn't want to lie anymore, and I did not know how to tell the truth. And that's the rock and the hard place they talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so on that day, I said the prayer to the God, that Catholic and that Baptist God and that AA God, whatever God there was, God of the AAs. Help me not to drink today, and I'll do what I'm told to do no matter what. And then I got rocketed into a fourth dimension and live happily ever after. Thank you. Good night. They found me crawling. This was Eloise, Florida, and they found me crawling down the Lakeland General Hospital 7th floor because there had been meetings at Lakeland General Hospital in 7 West, and they found me crawling down the floor. And I better tell you about Bob Terry. See, I'm trying to tell you about men that have had a big influence in my life. There's a lot of women, but I want to share with you the men. I don't know why I'm particularly bringing out the men who have saved my life, but men are not the enemy, never have been. You know, sisters are nice, but labels, that's my problem in life, labels. I've gotten in trouble all of my life because I wanted to put labels on you, and I don't want to do that anymore. So let's not call them men and women, let's call them precious children of God. This precious child of God named Bob Terry found me crawling down the corridor, and he propped me against the wall. I weighed about 400 pounds. I had no hair, no teeth, no fingernails. I was covered with syphilis and pus running out of every part of my body and wine sores and nothing that resembled a human being, much less a woman. And he thought he recognized me, and he said, "Patty." And I nodded or whatever I did, and he put his arms around the puke and the piss and the shit and the... And he hugged me, and the pus, and the syphilis, and he hugged me, and he squeezed me, and he said, "Welcome back, babe." And Thursday, when I got here, I disappeared, and I went up to the room, and I called New York. Bob and Jenny have not been well, and... Jenny told me that they were going to move back to West Haverstraw, New York. And I found them. I called their kids. And every year on February the 8th, at least, I call them and write to them. But every year on February the 8th, I call Bob Terry. And he picks up the phone and he says hello. And I go, "Happy birthday to me. Happy birthday to me. Happy birthday, precious Patty. Happy birthday to me." And he says, "Oh, baby girl. Baby girl." He says, "I love you." And I say, every year I say, "Thank you for saving my life." And he said, "Oh, honey, God saved your life. I was just the messenger." And this year, I got on the phone. I had talked to Bob and Jenny's kid, and Joanne started crying. She says, "My dad has Alzheimer's, Patty, and he's real bad. He's real, real bad." And she said, "He probably won't recognize. He's so bad. They're big drug. You're doing big drugs to him now because he paces all the time." And I called, and I talked to Jenny, and she started crying, and she says, "Oh, baby girl, I love you so much." She said, "When are you going to come to see me? I miss you so much." And we talked and we laughed, and I said, "Can I talk to him?" She said, "Well, okay." And she called him to the phone, and I got on the phone, and I said, "Happy birthday to me. Happy birthday." And he said, "Patty." He's the last one left. All those guys in my home group, they died sober. Damn them. You know why I came here this year? I've been wanting to come. Dolores has been inviting me to this thing for years. And I said, "Dolores, you know I go home to Florida to celebrate my sober date every year. I can't go to this thing." And so when you called, I don't know if I told you, I said, "They're all dead now. They're all dead. I'm going to come with you this year." See? Now, if I don't tell you about Katie, God, I've been talking too long. I got to tell you about Katie Haygood. I got to tell you about sponsorship, because that's why I'm alive today. I came to you a mean, venomous brat, an ugly, nasty, immature little brat, and you assigned me to this bitch. Oh, man, this 4'11" raving maniac. And I'd wake up and I'd come to, and there she was, smiling all the time, big smile all the time. My father, the mafia guy, had said only two types of people smile all the time, retarded people and people who are truly evil. And I used to wonder what the hell Katie was, whether she was retarded or evil. I could never figure out what the hell she was, because there was a little borderline schizophrenia there, I'm telling you. And I was 6 months staying alive in the hospital. I got 15% of my liver. You know what? That's just enough to get by. Do you know 15% of liver is all you got? My liver used to be real big. Now with cirrhosis, it's a little teeny tiny little shit thing, you know? And I got alcohol-induced diabetes. And did you see that dessert tonight? I took two bites out, but now let it go, you know? And I got real bad heart problems, you know? But if you ask me, how are you doing? Great. Jesus, I'm alive today. 18, 19 years of bar time, I love it. Anyway, Katie would say to me, all right, these are the things you have to do. Stay sober one day at a time. Now, I had 12 conditions to my life parole from prison. 12. Katie had 14 conditions. Number one, zip the lip, cross the legs. It was not do not drink. It was not do not drink. And we let these new babies in Alcoholics Anonymous just diarrhea mouth, blah, blah, talk. They got to get their feelings out. Who gives a shit how you feel, you know? Well, wait a minute. That's not me. That's Katie. That's what Katie said to me. Secretly, I believe it's true. But this is just personal opinion. Anyway, Katie told me that the steps were written in the past tense. That meant if you haven't worked them, don't report on them. Made sense to me. And she said, if you work the step, you can report on it. Until then, you keep your mouth shut. We don't need to hear about what you're going through. And she said, we don't care what you think and we don't care what you feel. Not a lick. I said, you don't care how I feel, and I try to report her to the General Service Council. They didn't want to hear. You know, she was killing Nuka. I don't give a shit. You know, she told me, she said, your best thinking got you a seat in Alcoholics Anonymous. We know what your best thinking can do. I said, you don't care how I feel? She said, no, you used to sit and get drunk one day at a time because of your feelings. Who cares how you feel? All we care about is your reactions to your feelings. She said, you may want to kill me on a daily basis. I thought, she's reading my mind. She said, but we don't care. We care what you do, your reactions to your thinking. Now, I still have some warped thinking, some really warped thinking. On any given day, I would not want my thinking on my best day put up here for you girls to see. Because you would not invite me back to Salt Lake City. Because it's really, warped. See? And that's my best day. See? So today, as long as I don't react to it. Now, sometimes I meet some of you, and I know we're commanded by Alcoholics Anonymous. Our only code is love and tolerance of others. And some days I can just barely tolerate your ass. We ain't talking about love. Some days I can just barely tolerate your ass. But then I got to, the longer I stayed sober, I figured, hell, if I feel the same way about them, maybe they feel that way about me. Now, that came as a terrible, terrible shock. You're right. Okay, condition number two. Okay, zip the lip, cross the legs. I said, what do you mean, cross the legs? She said, you know what that means? And I said, how long? She said, we generally start with a year. I'm not going to tell you how long it was for me. I don't want to scare off the newcomers. It's a long, long time. Take cold showers, masturbate. Who gives a shit? Yeah. Get a bidet. Wasn't that good entertainment tonight? I loved it. Okay, I had to get a job. I had to become self-supporting through my own contributions. Katie told me that there was one stumbling block of alcoholic females. We had been so used to, for 8,000 years of recording history, dependent upon the male for our self-sufficiency and our self-support, that we had lost our identity. And she said, if I became self-supporting through my own contribution, I might become comfortable with being a female. So she insisted, absolutely insisted I get a job. And I said, Katie, nobody will hire me. Look at me. Look at me. I have no hair. I have no teeth. Look at me. I weigh 350. Nobody will hire me. She said, God will provide. You suit up, shut up, show up. And she helped me do this little resume. It wasn't much, but honey, it was a beginning. A little resume. I had my name and address on it. And she took me home. And the fact that I was willing to do anything. And I had to fill out 5 job applications every day. And every day she said I had to get down on my knees. That was another condition. I had to get down on my knees every day and ask God for another day of continuous sobriety. And I had to thank him at night. That was another condition. And then one day she said, I'm tired of your lying. And I said, what do you mean you're tired of my lying? I don't lie to you. That was a lie. She said, I'm tired of you lying to yourself, and I'm tired of you lying to God. For God's sake, go in that room, shut the door, and get straight with your God. Stop lying to God. Stop saying those Catholic prayers. Stop saying those Baptist prayers, and get in there and tell God how you feel. And I went in. I was scared. I didn't know what the hell to do. I got on my knees, and I said, God, this is hard. This is hard. I hate your guts. I want to thank you for that goddamn mother of mine. You really shit on me. You really did a number on me. Oh, and by the way, I want to thank you for my father. Now listen, when you start praying like that, you get on a roll. You get on a roll. And I started thanking him for all these wonderful gifts he had given me. I said, by the way, thank you for the wonderful brain and no common sense. That's a real good joke, you know. I said, veterans should have common sense and not so much intelligence. Because I'm going to tell you something. I see alcoholics dying every day because they're too goddamn smart. But I don't see them dying because they're stupid. And I see alcoholics like me dying every day because they can't get their brain out of the way of their sobriety. Please, you know. If your sponsor tells you to do something, just do it, you know. Just humor the witch, you know. Just do it. Anyway, that's a personal opinion. Got to finish telling you about Katie because I wouldn't be up here today without Katie. Got a job. Katie said I had to go in that room, thank God for my job. So that night I got on my knees and I said, dear God, thank you for another shitty day of sobriety. And thank you for my shitty job. Amen. And it was washing dishes, $1.15 an hour in the Waffle House in Lakeland, Florida. And Katie said I hated washing dishes. Katie said I couldn't quit becoming a dishwasher until I was the best dishwasher in all of Florida. And especially Lakeland, and there was 3 Seminole Indians in there, and those bastards were born to wash dishes. And I knew I was doomed. I was doomed. Got another part-time job cutting cloth 2 nights a week at the Cloth World. Had to go to 10 meetings a week. Do you hear me, new babies? Don't come to me with your little piddly-ass 3 and 4 and 5 meetings a week. I don't want to hear your shit. If I had to go to 10 meetings a week, you have to, too. Meeting every night, 2 on Saturday, 3 on Sunday. If you don't like it, buzz off. Don't waste my time. Had to go to the prison every Monday night. Katie said, you don't know anything about staying sober, but you go down there and tell those guys that if you can stay out of prison one day at a time, they can too. In Florida, they let the women go to the male prisons. They wouldn't let me go to the female prison. I don't understand that, but that, what the hell. I went down to Avon Park. I didn't own a car. I said, Katie, this is Lakeland. Avon Park is 150 miles down the road. How am I going to get there? God will provide. Every Monday night for 13 months, I made it to Avon Park Prison. Now, I got to tell you about this. Cute. I got to tell you about this. Katie found out that my number of guys had grown from 20 to 75 overnight. Now, this is a program of attraction, is it not? Now, my hair had grown back. I had lost down to 130 pounds, and I was attracting them bastards. And I had on short skirts, and I had nice tits. And my thing was down to here. And she showed up at the 2720 Club one night before I commenced to go down to Avon Park Prison and saw the way I was dressed. Well, my numbers fell back down to about 20 because I started having to wear blouses up to here and skirts down to the floor. So no more attraction. Because I didn't have a message. All I could tell them was, if I can stay sober one day at a time, you can too. That's all the hell I knew. And then I told them what Katie told me to tell them. But it worked. I stayed sober. You know, every time I've ever sponsored anybody, it's been 100% success. Anytime I've ever 12-stepped anybody, it's been 100% success. Because this woman named Patty stayed sober. Okay? And one night we're sitting at the meeting, there's 8 gals. Let me tell you about my relationship with women. Katie sponsored a lot of people, and all of us came in the same time, these eight gals. And I told you, some of you, about Evie Smith Brown. She doesn't care. I'd break her anonymity, but she doesn't care. And Judy, see another. I break her anonymity. I shouldn't do that. Going to report me to New York office. And Linda Miller, you know, as well. Hell, they're all still sober. They're down in Florida. And they're my sisters. They're not my friends. They're my sisters. I would go through hell for any one of them. And they're sober today, see? And they're beautiful women, see? Beautiful women. And we'd sit there at the meeting, and Katie'd be there. See, and one night, I'm sitting there, and I go like this to Judy Fox. I said, Judy, I got it. I got to tell you this. I said, Katie, if you could unzip her forehead, if you could unzip it and lift it off, there'd be a little miniature roulette wheel going on around in there. It's going around and around. And her little brain is that little pea, that little thing that drops down in the slot. I said, now watch it, watch it, watch it. And so we sat there. We were all watching it one night. And clunk, that old thing dropped down in the slot of the roulette wheel. And Katie had a thought. Now, you could tell when Katie had a thought because your ass was in trouble. And she'd look at you and she'd say, I want to see you after the meeting tonight. See? And I was good at guessing it. And she pointed to me a lot. And she'd say, I want to see you after the meeting tonight. And we'd get out and we'd go to her car and she'd hug and kiss me. Or we'd go to Reese Cliff and have the pie, you know, and everything and the coffee. I wasn't allowed to have pie. But wonderful thing. And big conversation. It was wonderful. The meeting before the meeting and the meeting after the meeting. Oh, I loved it. I loved it. And she'd say things like, how much money do you owe? Well, I don't know, Katie. Give or take a dollar or two, maybe $250,000. She said, how many people do you owe? I say, well, I don't know it straight out, Katie. I haven't thought about it. I thought maybe I could go bankrupt. You know, whole new slate, sobriety, wipe the slate clean, go bankrupt, start fresh sobriety, a new day, a new beginning. Doesn't that sound cool? No. She said, that's stealing. And to steal is to drink, and to drink is to die. She said, you go home and inventory that. How much you owe and who do you owe it to? Shit, inventory. Goddamn inventory. People, I'll never pay them back. Lawyers. Who in the hell wants to pay a lawyer back? Yeah. No. So I took her my list. She says, I want you to write them letters and tell them that you will honor the debt and that you owe it and that you're going to pay them and that you're going to do the AA payment plan, dollar down, dollar a week. So I find myself. See, because I didn't do all these things. I did not do anything willingly. But every time she would tell me to do something and I didn't want to do it, she would remind me of that promise I made on February the 8th, 1977. She said to me, did God keep his end of the bargain today? I said, yes, ma'am, he has. Have you kept your end of the bargain today? Did you do what you were told to do? No matter what. I write the damn letters. Sitting at a meeting one night, here it goes. Click! She said, I want to see you after the meeting tonight. She said, you're intelligent, you got to go to college. Katie, I go to 10 meetings a week. I go to the prison. I work 4 part-time jobs. I don't have time. I don't have the money. God will provide. Went to one meeting too many that week. Beautiful gay man. Beautiful gay man. Beautiful. He had just graduated from Polk Community College. Vocational rehabilitation. He was a street whore. And now he was going to be a computer expert. And I went over and I said, how'd you do it? And she said, he told me. And I went to Katie, and Katie said, sounds like my goddamn tax money. I told you she was a Republican. Sounds like my tax money. And I, you know, alcoholics, when we want to do something, we talk fast. You know how we talk fast? I said, I'll pay them back. Oh, that's okay. You can do it. Went to that Polk Community College. Got that A&A degree. 1 year, not two, one. Told you I'm smart. Don't have a lick of common sense, but I'm real smart. One night at the meeting, the wheel was going around and around and around and around. See? My first little sober apartment. My first sober car. I wish I could tell you about my first sober car. She took me to the car dealer. The bitch wouldn't even allow me to go buy my own car by myself. She took me to the car dealer. She says she's got $2,000 cash dollars saved up. She wants to buy a car, and it's got to be a good one. And the one I wanted was hot. It was hot, girls. It was hot. No rust on it in Florida. This one knows. This one knows in Florida without any rust. Yeah, you got a good deal. And it was like $2,200. And she said, she'll work it out. She'll wash your toilets, do your billing for you. She'll make up the $200. Give her the car. I got the car. That night, big frost in Florida. Katie said, be the club early tonight. I said, why? And she said, because we're going to get calls from the state police. She said, all the bums out on the road will want someplace warm tonight to sleep. And we're going to have to go out there and take them, pick them up, take them to detox. I said, sounds like they're using AA to me. Why should we go out there and pick them goddamn bums up? See how quickly we forget, kids? Why should we go out there and pick them goddamn bums up? And she looked at me. And every once in a while, don't ever make your sponsor testy. Don't do that. And she looked at me and she said, this time one of them may want it. You'll be there early to the club tonight. So I'm there in my new car, early. And here is Katie riding shotgun, and here's Johnny Kitchens dead, sober, Don Golan in the back. And we go out and we pick the bum, and he hasn't changed his clothes in 6 months, and he's had peed so much time the ammonia has bleached his pants pure white in the front. And he's pooped, and he's got whiskers, and he's got puke all in his whiskers, and we're going 50 miles to the Bartow detox from where we had to pick him up, and I'm driving down the road, and I'm thinking, oh God, don't let him poop in my sober car, God. You see how quickly we forget. And my sponsor that night said she was so ashamed of me, and I didn't know that I needed that love and approval of that bitch. I didn't have a damn idea that I needed her love and her approval. And when she said that to me that night, I went home injured. It's like she had, right here, she had hurt me right to my innards. And I went home and I was crying and I told God I was so sorry that I was so, I didn't mean to be an ungrateful bitch, and forgive me. But we forget. Thank God, that's why these newcomers tonight, I hugged her. And I'm not making fun of you, baby. But I could smell the alcohol, and I thought, oh, God, a wet one, see? See, she's shaking. I don't know about you, but I love wet ones. I love wet ones. They come to us, and God, it's another opportunity to become a better woman, better human being, you know? This doesn't come natural to me, this sober life. It really doesn't. You think after 19 years I'd get the hang of it a little bit? I'm still not a big grown-up woman. My nickname in AA is Precious. The reason I got is because I used to jump up on the tables and cuss people out. And Katie would say, oh, Precious, what a wonderful comment you just made. Sit down, honey. Sit down. One night, I gotta close. I've talked too long. One night, I'm sitting there, and I'm whining. She's not there, and whenever she wasn't there, I got to whine and moan. And I think it was Dwight Ellis threw a $5 bill at me, said, here, bitch, sounds like you need a drink. Let me be the first to buy you one, you know. Do they do that in your group? And I picked it up, and I walked over to him, and I stuck it under his nose, and I said, when you run out of Charmin, honey, you use this. I'll be sober longer than you. And of course, he was sober 30-some years at the time. But arrogance. Arrogance. I better tell you about Katie. I sobered 2 years. Got an offer from a steel mill in Hammond, Indiana. $15,000 a year. Big money. Chance to go to Purdue my last 2 years. And I didn't want to go. I wanted to go, and I didn't want to go. And Katie said to me, sounds like God is providing. So I'm outside my car. They got my car all packed up, and all my buddies are there. And I got my U-Haul and got my sober car, got my travel permit from my life. Parole officer, my travel permit, and I got some money. I got my gas money, and I didn't know how to tell her I loved her. And I didn't know how to say it. And I wanted to tell her I love you. And the only thing I knew how to say was, how will I ever pay you back? See, that's the closest I knew how to come to love. Because she had taught me that we have to pay back what's been so freely given us. We must pay back. So I said to her, how am I ever going to pay you back? And I'll never forget that day. She pulled, a little woman, she pulled my face down and she put biggest old kiss right on my mouth. And she laughed and she said, oh, you will pay me back. I was up in Chicago, and I have to tell you, and I don't want you to think it was a big deal. It was not a big deal. It was not a lot of money. But there was a gal that I helped out, and I became her sponsor. And on her first year, I'd helped her out with Lil Doe. And on her first birthday, I gave her her token, just the same way Katie had given me my token. And she came to me that night. She was crying. She was so happy. She got her first year token. She was so excited. And she looked at me, and you know what that bitch said to me? She said, how am I ever going to pay you back? And I did the only thing I knew what to do. I took her face, I gave her the biggest old wettest kiss right on the mouth, and I said, oh, you will pay me back. Thank you, good night.